I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is June 21st, 2009. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's subject, the antioxidant myth, a medical fairy tale. Cranberry capsules, green tea extract, effervescent vitamin C, pomegranate concentrate, beta-carotene, selenium, grapeseed extract, high-dose vitamin E, pine bark extract, bee spit. You name it, if it's an antioxidant, we'll swallow it by the bucket load. According to some estimates, around half the adults in the United States take antioxidant pills daily, in the belief they promote good health and stave off disease. We have become antioxidant devotees. But are they doing us any good? Evidence gathered over the past few years shows that at best, antioxidant supplements do little or nothing to benefit our health. At worst, they may even have the opposite effect, promoting the very problems they are supposed to stamp out. It's little surprise that antioxidants have acquired a reputation as miracle health supplements. As long ago as the 1950s, scientists discovered that many diseases, including heart disease, strokes, cancer, diabetes, cataracts, arthritis, and neurodegenerative disorders such as Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, were linked to damage caused by highly destructive chemicals called free radicals. Free radicals are compounds with unpaired electrons that stabilize themselves by oxidizing other molecules, including proteins, carbohydrates, lipids, and DNA. In the process, they often create more free radicals, sparking off a chain of destruction. Oxidative damage accompanies most, if not all, diseases and has even been proposed as a direct cause of some, including lung cancer, atherosclerosis, and Alzheimer's. Free radicals are an unavoidable hazard of being alive. We live in an oxygen-rich atmosphere, and radicals, particularly reactive oxygen species, known as ROS, are natural byproducts of respiration. 1% of the oxygen we consume turns into ROS, says biochemist Barry Hallowell from the National University of Singapore. It doesn't sound like much, but humans are big animals and we breathe a lot. Over a year, a human body makes 1.7 kilograms of ROS. Exposure to x-rays, ozone, tobacco smoke, air pollutants, microbial infections, industrial chemicals, and intensive exercise also trigger free radical production. In the 1980s, however, a potential weapon against free radical damage appeared on the horizon. Scientists had known for a long time that people whose diets are rich in fruits and vegetables have a lower incidence of heart disease, diabetes, dementia, stroke, and certain types of cancer, the very diseases that are associated with free radical damage. Now there was an explanation. Fruits and vegetables are a rich source of antioxidants that can neutralize free radicals by donating electrons to them. Green plants are full of antioxidants for good reason. They are especially vulnerable to oxidative stress since they produce pure oxygen during photosynthesis. To protect themselves, they manufacture an assortment of potent antioxidants. And so a hypothesis was born. Dietary antioxidants are free radical sponges that can stave off the diseases of old age. It was a great idea. Putting two and two together, scientists assumed that these antioxidants were protective, and that taking them as supplements or in fortified foods should decrease oxidative damage and diminish disease. It was simple. Free radicals are bad. Antioxidants are good. The concept helped spawn a colossal supplements industry. According to the U.S. National Institutes of Health, more than half of U.S. adults take some form of vitamin or mineral supplement at a total cost of $23 billion a year. The bewildering range of supplements on the shelves makes it hard to say how much of this expenditure goes on antioxidants, but the National Institute of Health says it is probably a large proportion, and their popularity just keeps on growing. Spins, a market research firm based in San Francisco, estimates that the antioxidant market has grown by 18% in the past year alone. The best-known antioxidants are vitamin E, also known by its chemical name tocopherol, vitamin C, and two broad classes of plant chemicals called polyphenols, which includes flavonoids, and carotenoids, including beta-carotene and lycopene. Most supplements touted as antioxidants contain at least one of these, often as a pure chemical and sometimes as a concentrated plant extract. Since the early 1990s, scientists have been putting these compounds through their paces, using double-blind randomized controlled trials, the gold standard for medical intervention studies. Time and again, however, the supplements fail to pass the test. True, they knock the wind out of free radicals in a test tube, but once inside the human body, they seem strangely powerless. Not only are they bad at preventing oxidative damage, they can even make things worse. Many scientists are now concluding that, at best, they are a waste of time and money. At worst, they could be harmful. The first antioxidant to produce disappointing results was beta-carotene. Once a star among supplements, beta-carotene pills were recommended to smokers to protect them against lung cancer. This was largely based on the observation made in the 70s that people who ate a lot of carrots, which contain large quantities of beta-carotene, had some protection against cancer. In 1992, researchers at the U.S. National Cancer Institute set about testing beta-carotene. They recruited more than 18,000 people at high risk of developing lung cancer, either because they smoked or had been exposed to asbestos, and gave around half of them beta-carotene supplements. The trial was supposed to run for 6 years, but the researchers pulled the plug two-thirds of the way through after discovering, to their surprise and horror, that those taking supplements were faring worse than the controls. Their lung cancer rate was 28% higher, and the overall death rate was up 17%. It was a shock. It not only did no good, but it had the potential to do harm. Researchers couldn't be sure that these increases were not caused by chance, and beta-carotene capsules are still widely sold as antioxidants. Further trials, though, have strengthened the evidence that beta-carotene supplements not only fail to protect people against cancer, but can also increase the risk of lung cancer in smokers. In May of this year, an expert panel convened by the National Institute of Health concluded that there was no evidence to recommend beta-carotene supplements for the general population, and strong evidence to recommend that smokers avoid it. It's a similar story with the world's most popular antioxidant. Vitamin E shot to fame in the early 1990s after two large studies involving more than 127,000 people in total found that those with a diet high in vitamin E were significantly less likely to develop cardiovascular disease. The first study followed 87,245 female nurses for 8 years. It found that the top 20% with respect to vitamin E consumption had a 41% lower incidence of cardiovascular disease than the bottom 20%. The second study involving 39,910 male health professionals found a similar reduction in heart disease risk. The researchers, based at Harvard Medical School, even had a plausible mechanism. Evidence was emerging that one of the causes of heart disease was free radical damage to LDLs, tiny packages of lipid and protein that circulate in the bloodstream, delivering fatty acids to cells. It turned out that adding vitamin E to blood samples in the test tube made LDL more resistant to oxidation. Perhaps this was how vitamin E prevented heart disease. At the biochemical level, the rationale sounded so good. Use of vitamin E supplements soared. In 1990, almost nobody took vitamin E. By the end of the decade, an estimated 23 million U.S. citizens were knocking back daily doses. On the back of these positive results, other researchers set up large studies using vitamin E supplements. The results, however, have been almost universally disappointing. Only one experiment, the Cambridge Heart Antioxidant Study, found a positive effect, a 77% reduced risk of heart attack. Several others found no protective effect, and one even concluded that vitamin E increased the risk of heart failure. Other trials designed to test whether vitamin E supplements could prevent cancers, such as the ATBC study in Finland, also came in negative. Vitamin E also did not halt the progression to Alzheimer's disease in people with mild cognitive impairment. What is more, when scientists went looking for evidence that vitamin E protected LDL against oxidation in the body, not just in the test tube, they found none, except in people with a vitamin E deficiency. In fact, despite good evidence that vitamin E is a powerful antioxidant in the test tube, there is now serious doubt that it acts the same way in the body. Vitamin E is not an antioxidant. In fact, it must be protected against oxidation. Vitamin E exists in 8 different forms in nature, all of which function as antioxidants in the test tube, yet the body only uses one form, alpha tocopherol, which is pulled out of the bloodstream by a highly specialized protein in the liver. All the other forms are excreted. Evolution is unlikely to have gone to such great lengths simply to obtain an antioxidant from the diet. There are millions of antioxidants. Vitamin E is clearly doing something in the body. It is an essential part of the diet, and deficiency leads to neurological problems. But whatever it is doing, it is not an antioxidant. There is even some evidence that vitamin E supplements can be harmful. Last year, a team led by Edgar Miller of the Johns Hopkins Medical Institution in Baltimore made headline news when they amalgamated the results of 19 separate trials and concluded that high doses of vitamin E increase overall mortality. A reanalyzation of the data suggested that there was no change in mortality. Most people agree that there is no good evidence that large doses are harmful. Vitamin C is another disappointment. People are still trying to defend it, but you don't get an effect on free radical damage unless you start with people with a vitamin C deficiency. I think it is a lost cause, says Hollowell. In fact, results from a vast U.S. trial probing the links between diet and health, called the Women's Health Study, suggests that vitamin C supplements may accelerate atherosclerosis in some people with diabetes. One class of antioxidants that remains relatively unresearched is polyphenols. What little evidence there is comes from epidemiological studies, some of which suggest that polyphenols prevent disease and others of which do not. While polyphenols act as antioxidants in the test tube, it is not clear that they are absorbed into the bloodstream. And if they are, they are swiftly metabolized. For example, 95% of a flavonoid called resveratrol, the one found in red wine, is destroyed by our digestive system before it enters circulation. Just because a food with a certain compound in it is beneficial to health, it does not mean a pill with the same compound is. The conclusion is becoming clear. Whatever is behind the health benefits of a diet rich in fruits and vegetables, you cannot reproduce it by taking purified extracts or vitamin supplements. Just because a food with a certain compound in it is beneficial, it does not mean a nutraceutical with the same compound in it is. Yet the fact remains that people eating diets abundant in vitamin C, vitamin E, polyphenols, and carotenoids are less likely to suffer heart attacks, vascular disease, diabetes, and cancer. One explanation is that these people have generally healthier lifestyle. they exercise more and smoke less, for example. For now, no one knows for sure. There are some ideas. Hallowell still believes that antioxidants are at least partly responsible. He argues that because the polyphenols, carotenoids, and vitamins in fruits and vegetables are bound into tough, fibrous material, they hang around in the stomach and colon, where they can neutralize free radicals. The gastrointestinal tract, especially the stomach with its highly acidic environment, is constantly generating reactive oxygen species from food. Supplements may not replicate this effect because they are digested too quickly. Andrew Shao from the Council for Responsible Nutrition, a supplement industry trade association based in Washington, D.C., argues along similar lines. He says that pulling a nutrient out of context and testing it in a clinical trial is not appropriate. Antioxidants should not be expected to perform as drugs. That's simply not how nutrients work. They work in concert with each other. There's yet another, more intriguing explanation. Among the leading sources of dietary antioxidants are tea and coffee, and there is some evidence that green tea in particular is linked with health benefits, including reduced risk of cancer and cardiovascular disease. Oddly, though, Hallowell has discovered that tea and coffee are also bursting with reactive oxygen species in the form of hydrogen peroxide. Every time you drink a cup of coffee, it's a dilute bowl of hydrogen peroxide, says Hallowell. The hydrogen peroxide is there because of the presence of the antioxidants. Antioxidants is really just another way of saying reducing agent, which can react with oxygen in the water to produce hydrogen peroxide. Think platinum blonde and you get the picture of what you might be drinking. But if free radicals are bad for us, how come coffee and tea might be beneficial? One possibility is that they can help nudge our own internal antioxidant systems into action. There has been a considerable rethink as to what free radicals are doing. In the right quantities, radicals can be positively health-enhancing, promoting our cells to fire up their own internal defense machinery, a battery of radical-busting enzymes such as catalase and superoxide dismutase. Cells are very good at protecting themselves against minor stresses, as long as they are not excessive. The question is, should we be quenching free radicals at all? If it turns out that antioxidants in food work because they generate health-promoting quantities of free radicals, that would be an ironic turnaround. It may also explain why supplements and extracts don't seem to work, or may even be dangerous. The doses are too high and produce too many free radicals. For now, the advice is simple. Stick to flavonoid-rich foods, red wine in moderation, tea, fruits, and vegetables. Don't start taking high-dose supplements or heavily fortified foods until we know more. And now we move to the science segment. Today, a mother of twins has had a shock after doctors revealed that her 11-month-old boys do not have the same father. Mia Washington decided to get some expert advice when she and her partner noticed that twins Justin and Jordan had different facial features. Paternity tests then reveal what had happened. Two eggs had been fertilized by two different sperm, and there was a 99.99% chance the twins had different dads. Doctors at the DNA lab in Dallas, Texas, had never seen such a result. Mia later admitted she had had an affair and got pregnant by two different men at the same time. She told TV channel Fox 4, "Out of all the people in America and of all the people in the world, it had to happen to me. I'm very shocked." Clear Diagnostics President Jenny Thibodeau said, "It is very crazy. Most people don't believe it can happen, but it can." Sky's health correspondent Thomas Moore explains, "A woman can release two eggs from her ovaries, and the eggs will remain viable for 24 hours after ovulation. Sperm can survive up to 5 days inside a woman's body, so a woman could sleep with different men several days apart and get pregnant not once, but twice. And while it sounds rare, recent research indicates that 1 in 12 non-identical twins are so-called bipaternal, with a rise in fertility treatment and changing sexual behavior being blamed. Mia's partner, James Harrison, is father to one of the boys. He told Fox 4 that he had forgiven his fiance for having the affair and intended to raise both children as his own. However, he admitted it had been tough discovering the truth. It's a day-by-day thing. It's going to take time to build a trust like we had, he said. The couple plan to tell the twins they are half-brothers when they are old enough to understand. And now the arena goes abroad. Today we return to Tanzania in Africa to take a look at the albino witch trials. 7 people have gone on trial in Tanzania accused of murdering albino people and selling their body parts for use in witchcraft. More than 40 albinos have been killed there in the last 18 months. Witch doctors sell their albino potions for thousands of dollars, claiming they bring prosperity and good fortune. Powerful businessmen are believed to be among the clients driving the trade. Dozens of people have been arrested, but none convicted so far. Human rights organizations have expressed shock that it has taken so long for the trials to begin. BBC, the British Broadcasting Company, East Africa correspondent, Will Ross, says the justice system in Tanzania is notoriously slow and corrupt. In Shinyanga, in the northwest, 4 men pled not guilty to carrying out a gruesome murder. They were accused of attacking a young albino woman, cutting off her head and limbs, which were stuffed into a plastic bag, and then dumping her torso in a well. In nearby Kahama, 3 men also pled not guilty to killing a 13-year-old albino boy and severing his legs. Our correspondent says prejudice against people with albinism is widespread in Africa, but ritual killings in such numbers is a new phenomena. Both adults and children have been attacked in their homes, hacked to death, or had their throats cut. Each body part can be worth thousands of dollars. Superstitious miners, fishermen, and businessmen in Tanzania, hoping to get rich quick, have been accused of fueling the demand for the potions. The number of attacks has gone down in recent months, but the albino people still live in fear. When a person with albinism dies and is buried, their resting place often has to be cemented over to deter grave robbers. The Tanzanian government has publicly stated its desire to end the killings. In March, President Jakaya Kikwete called on Tanzanians to come forward with any information they might have. Last month, a similar trial began in neighboring Burundi, with 11 men accused of attempting to kill albino people and selling their body parts. Some were believed to have been traded over the border to Tanzania. There are estimated to be about 17,000 albinos living in Tanzania. They lack pigment in their skin and appear pale. And now for the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Slight deviation today. Instead of a person, this quote comes from or is attributed to a group known as the Jesuits. The Society of Jesus is a Roman Catholic religious order of clerks whose members are called Jesuits, soldiers of Christ, and foot soldiers of the Pope, because the founder, Saint Ignatius of Loyola, was a knight before becoming a priest. Jesuits are the largest male religious order in the Catholic Church, with 18,815 members, as of January 2008. Although the Franciscan family of First Orders, Capuchins, and Conventuals has more total members. Jesuit priests and brothers are engaged in ministries in 112 nations on 6 continents. They are best known in the fields of education, intellectual research, and cultural pursuits. They are also known in missionary work, social justice, and human rights activities. The Society of Jesus is consecrated under the patronage of Madonna della Strada, a title of the Blessed Virgin Mary, and is led by a superior general, currently Adolfo Nicholas. The headquarters of the society, its general curia, is in Rome. The historic curia of St. Ignatius is now part of the Collegio del Gesù, attached to the Church of the Gesù, the Jesuit Mother Church. And now for the quote attributed to the Jesuits. This is called a Jesuit boast. "Give me the child for his first 7 years, and I will give you the man."
Are you ready, Boots? Start walking.